This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who aspire to be. If you're a real estate, mortgage, or financial professional, this is the place for you. We'll explore innovative investment analysis, sales, marketing, and income-generating strategies for the most historically proven wealth creator, income property. Learn from the experts as they show you how to build a better business and a better life.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who desire to be. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about increasing your income, your productivity, and just generally having a better life while serving your clients better with America's most historically proven asset class, income property. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds. It's my pleasure to welcome Douglas Goldstein to the show. He is the author of Rich as a King, How the Wisdom of Chess Can Make You a Grandmaster of Investing. And he's coming to us today from a place I visited about, maybe 15 years ago or something like that. And that is Jerusalem. Doug, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Jason. Real great to be here. Doing great.
Good to have you here on it's a Sunday afternoon here, and it's like in the evening there, right?
That's right. Well, we're used to working around the clock here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I find this to be a fascinating concept that you and your co-author, Susan Polgar, are applying the game of chess to investing and really wanting to impart a more strategic overview of this investing game. And people really aren't that strategic sometimes, are they? They kind of like to think they are, I think. But in reality, it's not, I'm guessing. What are your thoughts?
I am sorry to say, but I do think that's very true. You know, one of the topics that it's actually become more of a hot topic these days is called behavioral finance. In fact, one of the Nobel Prize winners, Daniel Kahneman, wrote a best-selling book about it, Thinking Fast and Slow. And people began to realize that the way that investors handle money has very little to do with logic and common sense, but has so much more to do with the emotions that guide them and sometimes guide them down the wrong path.
Well, as I like to say, we all like to think of ourselves as logical beings, but we ultimately make decisions emotionally and then rationalize them with logic. Would you say that's true?
That's exactly what happens.
Okay, so the game of chess and investing. Give us the broad view here.
One of the things that I discovered, and maybe I'll step back, I'll give you a little background for how we got here, was that sitting with one of my kids, two of my kids actually are chess champions here, and so they have coaches, and I was sitting with one of them with her coach, my daughter was a top player, and we were examining a game, we were doing a post-mortem of a game that I had actually played with my daughter, and the coach said to me, he said, Doug, why didn't you move your bishop away from this square? And I had some excuse like, I don't know, I was busy focusing on something else. And then the next move we analyzed, he said, Doug, your bishop was badly placed. Why didn't you move it away from this square? And again, I had some other reason. I wanted the castle or I was developing another piece. And this conversation went back and forth for a while until finally it struck me that I sounded exactly like my financial planning clients sound when I ask them, Mr. Smith, you've got a pretty poorly performing investment that's not going anywhere. Why don't you move it? And he always says some excuse. And that's kind of when the light bulb lit up and I realized this one piece of advice. And then I began listening more carefully to what Boris was saying as far as chess goes. All of the pieces of advice he gave seemed to apply directly to what I discovered I was discussing with clients.
Okay, good. So I used to be fascinated by the game of chess. When I was a kid, I would play chess for hours and hours on end. I never got good at it, but I was certainly fascinated by it. And it seems to me the whole key to chess, please correct me because I may be totally wrong, is just being able to think several moves ahead, how one thing impacts another and another and another. You know, is that what you're trying to apply to investing?
So I'm glad you asked that question because, frankly, that's what most people say. And they'll say, hey, Doug, or they'll speak to my co-author, Susan Polgar, and they'll say, what a great idea. Chess players are thinking so many moves ahead. And like you're saying, investors have to do that as well. And frankly, I like to tell them that if that was all there was to this book, we could have saved ourselves years and years of research and writing hundreds and hundreds of pages and just printed up a bumper sticker that said, "Plan ahead. It wasn't raining when Noah built the ark."
Okay, yeah, good point.
So I like to think there's more to it than that. And I really think that, and by the way, that's the question you're raising I once asked Susan. In fact, it turns out when I asked her when we first met each other many years ago, I asked her, "How many moves ahead do you think?" And she laughed and she said, "This is the most common question that we ever get. And she's, quite frankly, you know, not so many, maybe one or two. And it was fascinating to me. And then I began studying that most of the world chess grandmasters and world champions, they're not planning ahead 30 or 40 moves like we might expect. And in fact, if you do the math, it's simply impossible for the human mind to do the trillions of calculations that the decision tree would grow into after just a few moves. It's just not possible.
That's why computers are so good at this kind of thing, because, you know, the human mind, and I've been studying AI quite a bit lately, and yeah, you know, I'm very much a futurist and love studying all of the stuff. I mean, we truly live in an amazing time, Doug. I'm sure you'll agree. But, you know, that's why computers they are very good at that type of thing, of, you know, all these if-then scenarios. But our minds aren't good like that. We're good at other stuff, but that's not one of our things, is it?
But one of the things we are good at, I think, is reevaluating on a constant basis, which is something you have to do, certainly in your business, Jason. You must see that it's not just that you go into an investment and you never think about it again, or you say, "Listen, I'm going to put all my money here and I'm done for the next 20 years. You've got to keep an eye on what's going on, and you've got to look for opportunities, and you have to know how to deal with them. But real life comes up, right? Real life happens. And a good chess player, or a, you know, someone who's going to own a rental property, or someone who's going to set up a stock portfolio, has to be able to adjust for what's going on in the market. I'm not saying you have to be a trader, because quite frankly, I'm not a big fan of buying and selling all the time. But that doesn't mean you can close your eyes to what's going on.
So what do we do? I mean, you know, give us some, like, I mean, we're dying for some strategy here. Like, how do we apply this to our investments? So, you know, we've got, you know, thousands of clients. They're out there. They're buying income properties. It does become a little bit addictive as long as you don't have a bad experience, which certainly happens once in a while. But even then, it still becomes a little addictive, and that's great. You know, and they're sort of playing this game of Monopoly, if you will, and accumulating all of these income properties. I mean, how do we apply strategy to this? How do we apply strategy to any investment? You know, I know you deal a lot with stocks and bonds and, you know, the Wall Street type traded stuff. Either one. I mean, just, you know, any examples or stories. I know you have a lot of stories here.
You know, I like the term you're using, which is accumulating, because one of the problems that certainly I find all the time when I'm thinking about money, and I bet this happens to you, is sometimes you feel, what to do when there's nothing to do? Maybe there's not a deal that's in front of you, or maybe you just can't figure out how to improve your situation. And in discussing that with Susan, one of the things that she said, which is really important, is if you don't have a good idea, as much as possible, do nothing. So in the chess game, it's impossible, because every move, every time it's your turn, you have to make a move. But if you don't have something to do, don't just start moving your pieces around. She said that's the easiest thing. That's what makes it easiest for her to beat an amateur player, because all she has to do is just stick to her plan. And after a few moves, the amateur doesn't really know what to do, but he's forced to move. And that's what ends up making, you know, he makes a mistake. But luckily, as investors, frankly, it's a little bit easier for us, because if you have cash sitting on the side and you don't have a good move to make, don't make a move. Just sit tight.
Yeah. I mean, I say that to my clients all the time. Sometimes the best deals are the ones you don't do.
So Warren Buffett has a great quote about this. I forget the exact wording, but he said that the difference between baseball and the stock market is that in the stock market, there's no such thing as a called strike. So if you missed a great stock came by and you didn't buy it, don't worry. Wait till tomorrow. You'll find something else. And I think that's very, very true. in the world of investing.
You know, you've got a lot of chapters and sub-chapter titles here in the book. How to avoid mistakes when you're halfway there, how to achieve financial goals, you know, the plan to get rich. And there's just so many subheads of all of these things. And then you get into the tactical side. So you start with strategy, that's the higher level, and then specific tactics. You know, do you want to maybe talk any more about strategy and then get into some specific tactics we can use?
I want to take you back to something, Jason, that I said earlier about behavioral finance, because I really think that's where a lot of the strategy gets messed up. We don't have to go into a whole long discussion about the importance of planning ahead, because I really want to dive into why people aren't able to do that. And what really happens is that people will tend to get overconfident, for example, in their ability to make a decision. And they'll get so overconfident, and by the way, men are much worse than this than women, that they'll start making deal after deal or trade after trade that ultimately leads them to dramatically underperform not just the markets and, you know, let alone being able to stay ahead of inflation, which is impossible, of course, when you're losing money. So I think the strategy that people have to start with is to look at the big picture and allow themselves to develop an overall plan so that the emotions don't come in and ruin every good decision that they're going to make.
Okay, good. So tell us how we can do that. I mean, yeah, I would agree with you. You know, men are usually more willing to be risk tolerant and so forth. And by the way, you know, just a side note on that, that's one of the reasons there is this wage gap that people are, you know, especially on the left, are always complaining about. It's because men will usually, not always, of course, they'll take the more risky jobs, you know, the outside sales job, for example, and that pays better than the admin job where you got a steady salary. And having employed hundreds of people over the years myself, I mean, many hundreds, you know, I've just seen that pattern repeat over and over again. So, you know, risk-reward ratio, right? I mean, you know, if it's a calculated risk.
Have you found that when dealing a difference between men and women as far as the real estate investing also?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, men are more willing to be speculative. They're more willing to be gamblerish with their investments. Now, certainly women will gamble for entertainment. You know, and unfortunately, many people of both genders gamble as an addiction, and that's terrible. You know, but in the markets, people gamble too. I mean, you know, Wall Street has been called a giant casino by many, many people. And, you know, so I would say that the non-gambling side of investing is the side that produces income. If you invest in dividend-paying stocks, you are an investor. And I'm not even going to call it investing. If you buy non-dividend paying stocks, you are a gambler. You are a speculator because you're betting solely on a story. If you're a real estate investor and you buy cash flow properties, that's investing. If you buy properties that you simply expect appreciation to occur, that's speculating or gambling.
Right. I think that's actually a very good point. And a lot of people get confused because they get sold a basket of goods by someone who says, buy this property in some terrible area and it's going to, you know, it can't get any lower because it's, you know, you have to just, you're required to actually tear down the property when you buy it. And so people go, wow, if it's so cheap, I can make, you know, 100 times my money. And it's exactly what you're saying. They're not realizing that that may not be a good investment. They're not identifying a property or a stock or a fund that's going to create an income stream for them. And really what I think most people are looking for, at least in my experience of investing, is they're not trying to become millionaires. They're trying to achieve certain goals, the least of which is being able to pay the bills every month securely for the rest of their life. And that's where I think, you know, income in one form or another is so critical.
Income is pretty, you know, at least when it comes to real estate investing, income is pretty reliable. I mean, you know, it's nothing is perfect, but it's a lot more reliable than trying to predict appreciation. Okay, I'll tell you that much. And so my rule is just anything, I mean, this is the rule. Anything without an income is not an investment, it's a speculation. Anything without income is not an investment, it's a speculation. So these people that consider themselves investors and they buy gold and silver, I mean, that's just a speculative gamble, you know, Bitcoin, speculative gamble, you know, talk about the ultimate fiat money. It's a cryptocurrency. I mean, that is the definition of fiat money. You know, they say that the dollar isn't backed by anything. Well, I would disagree. It's backed by aircraft carriers.
Full faith and credit.
No, forget about full faith and credit. How about the military? It's backed by aircraft carriers, intercontinental ballistic missiles, ground troops, helicopters. That's what's backing the dollar, okay? I mean, you know, it's just, you hear these arguments from these gold bugs. I mean, they're just, it's just crazy. It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. You know, if it doesn't produce income, it's a gamble. You know, and sometimes gamblers win. Listen, I do some speculative stuff myself, but, you know, income is the reliable thing. So would you consider that? How would that play into the chess metaphor that we're talking about?
Yeah, let me give you a good example. As you're saying, and I'm beginning to think of something that Susan once told me. You know, when you play with someone who is so much better than you, and Susan and I played a number of games together, and needless to say, very, very rapidly, she, you know, crushed me. But so after the games, I would always say, well, what could I have done better? And she said, you know, when you feel like there's nothing to do, meaning you can't develop some great strategy and there's no fantastic tactic that's going to let me capture her queen, she said, just look for one piece you can move that will give you a small advantage. Try to take one. You've got a whole arsenal, right? You've got a bunch of pawns and a few other big pieces. Which one is not performing? And how can you switch that into something that's performing even a little better? And so I think that applies very much to the world of investing, whether it's saying, you know, I'm sitting on $100,000 in money market earning 0%. Can't I even put that into a CD as one step up? Or is there a property that's available? Or is there some sort of portfolio change I could make just to improve it a little bit? And I'm not saying you necessarily have to do some radical switch, but if you are a long-term investor, finding the parts of your portfolio that aren't performing and just making them improve a little bit, just the compound interest is going to make a huge difference.
Yeah. You know, that's really an interesting statement, Doug, because Einstein called compound interest one of the great wonders of the world or something like that. You know, he has a quote like that. I can't remember exactly how he said it, but it's true, you know. And maybe that old story of the two people hiking in the woods and they see a bear coming in their direction and one stops to tighten his shoelaces and the other one's running and says, "Come on, man, you can't outrun a bear." And he says, "I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you." You know, and that's really the point, though, because economics, financial success, wealth creation, it's a relative game. Okay, the whole economy is based on the theory of relativity. So say, for example, tomorrow there's another huge financial crisis, and let's say it's worse than the Great Recession we just had, and some would argue we're actually still in, even though it doesn't look like it. You know, and that's maybe another discussion. But I entertain that argument. I'm willing to entertain it myself. But, you know, and say it's worse than the Great Depression was, you know, 7+ decades ago. And tomorrow, every millionaire is only worth $100. Okay. And we're just talking US here. I know we got a global audience, but we'll just make it dollars to make it easy. So, you know, everyone's worth $100, every millionaire, right? But if all the millionaires are only worth $100 tomorrow and everybody else is only worth $10, well, they're still rich. I mean, because all the prices in the marketplace, they may not adjust immediately. And that's what kills investors, by the way, is the lag time between cycles. That's what kills people. But, you know, the prices ultimately in every marketplace will have to adjust or sellers won't be able to sell anything. So a brand new $100,000 car will then become relative to everybody having a net worth of $10 or $100, right? The car will have to get cheaper or nobody will be able to buy it. And so it's a relative game. And with that incremental move that you just mentioned, if you can just give yourself a slight advantage, and think about this, when you look at bank rates today that are meaningless, I mean, you know, you earn 0.5% in the bank, right?
If you're lucky, right?
Yeah, if you're lucky, good point. If you can make 1%, you've not increased, you know, don't think of it as 0.5% increase. Think of it as a 100% increase. relative to what you were making. You've doubled your return. And if everybody else is only making 0.5%, I mean, wow. That, you know, you play that out over the course of 10 years, and that little tiny thing is a big difference. So, you know, I say if you're not going to buy a property, if you can invest in private lending or hard money lending where you've got good security, you know, ideally you're even doing short-term loans, and you can make 10% on your money pretty conservatively, really, gosh, you know, you've basically taken the bank return and multiplied it by 20. That's a 2,000% increase?
The numbers become staggering, I think, when people begin to find new ways of really improving what's going on and what they've got going.
Yeah, yeah. Keeping your money in play over time, exploiting Einstein's compound interest quote, is an amazing thing. You just got to be patient, right?
Absolutely. And that's probably, that goes back to the behavioral finance thing, which is simply that people aren't patient. And they, you know, when they read a story or they hear about someone who made money, they never bother to see how long it took them to make that money.
Yeah. 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 No question. You know, you've got a subhead in your book about zero coupon bonds. And I'm just kind of interested in that because I've heard a lot about them. Are they even around? I mean, do we even have zero coupon bonds anymore? And can you explain what that is to the listeners?
Sure. Zero coupon bonds. Well, let's go back to what a plain vanilla bond is. A bond is simply a loan that you make to a company or to a government. And it has a certain period. So let's say it's a 5-year bond and maybe it's a 4% bond. So they pay you every year 4%. And then at the end of the period, they'll pay you back the face value of the bond. So most bonds are issued at $1,000 a piece, which basically means you're lending money. 5 years later, they'll pay you back the $1,000. And every year you're getting a $40 coupon or $40 payment from the issuer of the bond.
4% in the case you mentioned.
Yeah, 4%, which is $40 a year on a $1,000 bond. So the value of the bond might go up and down during the life of the bond, but assuming the issuer doesn't default, then you know you're going to get your $1,000 back at the end. So zero coupon bonds are kind of a derivative of these bonds for people who don't need the $40 every year. And what happens is the bond is basically stripped of that coupon. Imagine literally it was a piece of paper that had little $40 tags associated, coupons. And if you just tore those off and put them to the side, that $1,000 bond would no longer really be worth $1,000 because you took off the $40 interest payments every year. That's called a zero coupon bond because it now has zero coupons on it. And those are sold at a discount. A lot of times people would buy those because they could buy them at a discount to the $1,000 final value. And they might pay, let's say, $800 today. And they know sometime in the future they'll get back $1,000. And because they don't need the income currently, all of that interest is growing on a compounded basis as well. So that's what a zero coupon bond is. I don't necessarily think they're as popular today as they've been in the past when interest rates were higher.
Right, right, right. What about, you know, a lot of the sort of asset protection people talk about bearer bonds, and I've interviewed several of them on the show. Are those around anymore? Are those even legal to have bearer bonds?
I have not seen one in at least, I don't know, 10 or 15 years, and I've been in the business a long time. I usually, these days, when especially people who are global, I strongly advise them not to walk around with stock certificates or anything where it's physical because of the difficulties in trying to actually trade such a security. If it's held by a brokerage firm, you know that they're the ones validating the security. But if someone walked into my office and said, "Hey, Doug, I have a certificate for 100 shares of XYZ stock," I wouldn't just sell it for them on the spot. We have to go through a whole procedure to make sure that it's a good certificate. And it could take you literally weeks, if not months, to be able to sell that. So you lose all of the benefits that the liquidity of having stocks or bonds normally have when you have them inside a brokerage account.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. I just kind of wanted to ask you as an aside about that. Part D of your book, you know, talks about 64 strategies to make you as rich as a king. And you liken those all to chess moves. And as we're kind of wrapping up here, you did talk about, you know, the small moves and so forth. And I think you alluded to that every piece has a purpose and so forth. But, you know, are there any one more of those you want to pick out just before we wrap up?
Yeah, I'll tell you, Jason, there's one I'd like to touch on, and it sort of It comes from when I was getting ready for this interview and I was looking at your website. And I noticed that one of the things that you have on your website is a huge amount of information that's free that people can learn from. And I remember when I was talking to Susan, and once again, it goes back to a game that we played, and I lost a piece to her. And she said, Doug, you just gave me a free piece. And she said, that's a good lesson in chess and in investing. Whenever something is free and really free, meaning it's of value, and it's not that it's a hidden thing where you're going to, someone gives you a free offer, but really you're going to end up spending a lot of money. Nothing wrong with taking advantage of it. And it, certainly when you go to websites like yours or like the Rich as a King website, we have tons of information, whether it's blog posts or podcasts or articles or calculators. I think that people who are really interested in improving their investment game, like they would their chess game, take advantage of all this stuff because there's so much you can do, you know, just to learn to trade the stock market. You can play free fantasy stock games. You can find financial calculators all over the web that can help you to determine what sort of trading or what sort of investing or loans that you can afford. And I don't understand really why people aren't taking the time to find these great tools like you have on your site and we have on our site.
Yeah. Well, some do and some don't. You know, I think one of the challenges nowadays is the world is just so awash in information. It's really hard to find the good stuff. There's just a lot of stuff out there. And now the job, you know, it used to be in the old days that the job was, you know, can you find the information? And it was really hard to get the information. Now the problem is sorting through all the information that's out there. You know, that's a huge job in and of itself. But hey, I appreciate you sharing this with us today. And the website is richasaking.com. Is that correct?
That's right. Just like the name of the book. And the Twitter handle is the same as well.
Richasaking.com. And the book, of course, is on Amazon with 32 reviews and 5 stars. So congratulations on that. And Doug, thank you so much for joining us today. Keep up the good work.
Jason, I really appreciate it. Looking forward to speaking to you soon.
You know, sometimes I think of Jason Hartman as a walking encyclopedia on the subject of creating wealth.
Well, you're probably not far off from the truth, Penny, because Jason actually has a 3-book set on creating wealth that comes with 60 digital download audios.
Yes, Jason has that unique ability to make you understand investing the way it should be. It's a world where anything less than 26% annual return is disappointing.
I love how he actually shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I also like how he teaches you to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And the entire set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered at a savings of $94.
That's right. And to get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series, complete with over 60 hours of audio and 3 books, just go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month, just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.